Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Just like Jesus, we are back. It's VGC, the video game podcast, with me, Jordan Midler, and Chris Scullion. This week, Jim Ryan is gone, but not without a few clangers on the way out the door. And we are going to answer your questions because today is Tuesday, not Thursday, due to some scheduling abnormalities. Chris, how are you?
I'm okay. This is about as makeshift as it gets. Like, obviously, you're going on holiday very soon, and it's also the Easter break for the kiddies, so I'm currently at my parents' house because they're watching my daughter while I work, which means that this is not my usual mic. This is not my, the risk of sounding like talking heads, this is not my typical headphones. This isn't my headphones, this isn't my mic, this isn't the computer I usually use, this isn't the camera I usually use. I'm drinking Monster instead of Iron Brew, so it's just like everything's Alice in Wonderland today, but we're getting there.
It's, speaking of, top of the show, I'm significantly cutting down on my Monster consumption, mainly out of being challenged to do so. It's not my personal decision, but if someone challenges me to do something, I will try and do it. So once the current reserve is finished, this is the second last one. I've got one for the morning to go to the airport. That's going to be it.
The end of an era.
A little while. There are alternatives that aren't quite as toxic. I've always said, see if they sold Pepsi Max and cans of that size, I'd be quite happy. It's something about a big can. It just, I don't want to be, it's absolute peak laziness. But how was Easter? Did the wee one get an absolute shedload of chocolate?
She did. She got her fair share of eggs. We did the usual, you know, the usual, I don't know if it is the usual because I never used to do this, but we pretend the Easter bunny's been and put loads of wee eggs around the house. And then just purely typically, we've completely forgot to do it. So then on Easter Sunday she woke up like, where's the eggs? And I'm like quick as a flash, because I'm obviously like great at dealing with such situations. I went, well, don't forget, it's Easter Sunday and Easter Monday, because like Santa's got a sleigh and reindeer, he can fly about like really fast, but the Easter bunny's just a wee rabbit and hops, so it takes the Easter bunny longer. So it does some houses on Sunday and some houses on Monday, so we'll get it tomorrow. And we did.
I would have went with they're just really well hidden, and then your missus takes it off to one room and you're just throwing them out. Just scatter them.
Like in Home Alone where he just throws his marbles on the floor. I'm like, there's your eggs, you prick.
Exactly. What my dad used to do, so we never did the like small eggs. He would just hide the boxes, like the Easter egg boxes. He would watch me where I went and then put them down where I've already searched to totally gaslight me. So I'd be like, oh, well, they're not behind the couch. I've already looked. Look again. There they are.
As if the Easter bunny's actually in the house at the same time.
Yeah. I can't remember if the Easter bunny was actually part of the mythos. Like, that doesn't seem...
It was for me,
it was,
but...
I think it was just you got chocolate, but I can't quite remember.
That's the thing. I remember the Easter bunny being a thing, but not that the Easter bunny came to my house. It was just like, there's your eggs. But Tooth Fairy's real, though.
Exactly. That's why I'm so, so rich, because I pulled out all my teeth at a young age. But Easter is about one man, Jesus Christ. Speaking of Jesus Christ, story number one. Jim Ryan says the PlayStation 5 is well on track to be Sony's most successful console ever. He was talking on the official PlayStation podcast. And I'll read the quote just so we're not putting words in the man's mouth. PlayStation 5 is well on track to be our most successful console ever across multiple vectors. Keep that bit in mind. And I think the games and the gaming experiences you see on PlayStation 5, led by PlayStation Studios, are the best that we've ever seen. Chris?
Yes.
Explain to the audience at home why he said across multiple vectors.
Well, because the man is talking out of his hoop, and he, by saying multiple vectors, that covers him so that if, let's say, it's the most successful because it makes Sony more money than any other system before, which would make sense because it's like three times the price of a PS1. Then he can get away with it that way. He can come out and say, see, I told you guys, we made more money on this. And I would be shocked, stunned, and in complete awe if it overtakes PS2.
Odd if it overtakes PS4. Like,
because he can talk all he likes about vectors and all that snash, but the reality is everyone compares units sold, which is what we were talking about last week with everyone saying, is Microsoft doomed because PS5 is selling more than double what Xbox, at the very least, than what Xbox Series X and S does. People only count units sold. They don't care how much money Xbox is making. If the PlayStation 5 is selling X number of times more, then it's winning. So it can cram his vectors because the final kind of tally that people will count is how many they've sold, and if they don't sell as many as the PS2, then it's not their most successful console in my eyes.
Exactly. You can say we have the most engaged user base based on time played. That's a vector.
Active users.
Stuff like that. Obviously, he's the now former CEO, God rest him, of Sony. So he has all of these ways to spin the PlayStation 5. I bet if you speak to Phil, he'll have stats to be like, well, it's the best Xbox because we have the most controllers we've ever released on it. That vector absolutely knackers the rest of them. But we'll come to it in a second. There was an air in this podcast of like, well, I'm at the door, who's going to say anything to me? Like, and funnily enough, this was recorded apparently months ago, because on the podcast it was like, oh, that was a great, that's the longest I've ever chatted. It's Sid Schumann, who's like their content man now, was like, this is the longest I've ever chatted to Jim. That was a great interview when we sat down a couple of months ago. Mm. And it's like, he's just been sat on that for all this time, ready to just release it when there's absolutely no recourse. This is a bit of a strange one. Where do you see the PS5 going? Like, do you see the momentum carrying on? Do you see it kind of teetering? Because I think what for me, I'm concerned about is the games. Like, what is keeping it afloat?
Yeah.
But also, does it actually matter? Because even the stuff that we give 5 stars and gets like 90 Metacritic, it sells a bohead of what like EAFC sells and stuff like that. So what does it actually matter?
It's hard to tell, isn't it? Because I mean, it ticks away, and it's obviously, like, again, like we were saying last week, it's the popular one, it's the mainstream one that people associate with video games. It's the place. So when you want a new console, you go and get a PS5. That's the kind of default, which is why Microsoft is struggling so much, because more a perception thing rather than necessarily a quality thing. I think both the consoles are pretty good. But yeah, it's such a weird one. You've got to think that it'll run out of steam at some point. Like, certainly the fact you can easily just go and buy one in the shops now means that the days of stock shortages are definitely gone. So
just wait for the Pro. Well, if they don't make enough Pros, it'll all be the same thing
exactly,
over again.
Conveniently. It feels like unless the games are coming and there's no sign of them anytime soon, like you're talking probably next year before another big, big, big game is out, potentially. Maybe we'll get one at the end of this year. Other than your FIFAs and your Call of Duties, I can see no massive reason to go and pick one up if you haven't got one yet, other than you finally got the money for it and you didn't have the money for it before and now you do. That's the only reason I can think for it. It's weird that someone would hold fire for so long and then suddenly go, now's the time to buy a PS5 when nothing's been out for a while.
Maybe you detach it from PS5 and they just, as we say, when people get to that point where they're like, you know what, this PS4, tried and true, it's a bit knackered, I need a new one. Yeah. They just get the PS5, like, which is a real nightmare for Xbox, because I still feel like, how many normal people, and I don't count us, I don't count anyone listening to this podcast, normal Joe understands what you get out of an Xbox in terms of Game Pass, in terms of things like that, because I still don't think they actually tell the general public enough what it is and what the value is. Like, you almost need an old school, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ad to be on in the middle of the Champions League final to be like, see, look at all this game, all these games, Indiana Jones, Halo, etc., etc., etc. Fill the screen with games, and then you say, and how much did that cost? Oh, $9.99 a month, or whatever.
100%.
And then they wouldn't do this because I mean maybe they do this. I would like them to do this. Then do like, hello, Mr. Blue Console. You have a lot of games over there. How much did all of those games cost you? And they're like, oh, for 10 of these games, that's £700.
Yeah.
So
it's funny because in America they used to do that a lot more, like especially in the '90s when during the 16-bit era, they used to kind of, Sega used to take pot shots at Nintendo quite a lot. Obviously,
Sega does what Nintendo
exactly, and you had one where it was like, a dog. It was a magazine advert that had a picture of a dog sitting next to a Game Boy, and it was like, some people don't mind the fact that the Game Boy is in color, whereas the Game Boy is in black and white, whereas the Game Gear's in color. But some people can't see color anyway. It was like, well, you wouldn't get away with that these days. The accessibility folks would be right up their jacksie. But you're right. The Microsoft, the one major failing I think they have is not getting Game Pass across to the masses, because I'm sick of telling people about Game Pass and like normal quote unquote normal people who don't read games websites. I'm sick of telling them what Game Pass is and them having never heard of it. It should be, like you say, a TV advert. There should be a campaign just saying all these games, X hundreds of games for X a month, the end.
Someone should be on the breakfast, BBC breakfast sofa. It should be, and now people are used to paying for Netflix and Disney Plus, where you get all of this entertainment for £10. Yeah. But what about in the world of video games? And then it cuts to Mark Cieslak walking in front of a game shop and going, "Game, formerly the home of entertainment, now a graveyard. Mark Cieslak, BBC, London." Like, that needs all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's like, but you wonder if it's too late. Like, it needs a proper... Yeah. I was going to say they need to do a 180 rather than a 360, but it's frustrating because we, like, there must be a reason why they're not doing it, because to me and you, it seems obvious. Tell people what the one major benefit is of your thing, because PlayStation isn't doing it well with PlayStation Plus either. They're dropping the ball.
They clearly care significantly less.
Exactly, they're dropping Plus. They could sell even more if people were aware. Oh, by the way, I don't need to spend £70 on these games. I can spend X amount and get loads of games. Loads of kind of mainstream people who don't read video game websites are blissfully unaware that, like, there's so much savings to be made on both sides, and it's a shame. Someone needs to kind of grab people by the shirt and say, "Hey, by the way, get tore in."
It could be Jim Ryan. What if he went to Xbox?
Big Jimmy
R. Does Lex Luger shows up on the Xbox stage the same night? Mall of America. Speaking of Big Jimmy R, he claimed that the PlayStation 2 sold 160 million units. I'm going to read his quote again, so we're not, because I have put many words in that man's mouth with an incredible impression. Since it's probably the last time, why don't I? "I would say 160 million, which is the number of PS2s that we sold. 160 million PS2s, Chris. The last time they reported on it, it was 155. Where's this last 5 million came from? I'm just getting a phone call, so you rant, okay?
Okay, well, this is where I can now rant freely without Jordan the fanboy questioning my argument. The reason, Mr. Ryan, in my opinion, I don't have access to PlayStation's internal figures, but in my humble opinion, as a mere man who analyzes these things from afar, is that Mr. Ryan has plucked 5 million PS2s out of his arse on the way out the door. He stood up from his desk just as he was leaving and says, "Oh, what's this? From under my arse, 5 million PS2s. Perhaps because he's on the way out and he wants a final wee statement just to push the numbers up a wee bit more, just because the Switch is getting very close to overtaking the PS2's 155 million, and he's put a wee 160 in. And here's Jordan.
How
back.
Dare you say that about Jim Ryan, the bastion of truth?
It was all perfectly reasonably
not
argued.
Actionable.
Yeah. Not actionable. Yeah, I just basically say that he pulled out his arse.
Yeah. I mean,
it's one of those things
that's like, does he think, oh, saying 155 million is boring? Well, I just, was it malicious? Here's my more important question. Was it specifically to ward off the Switch beating it? Or was it just like, oh, it's 160 million rather than saying it's 155 million?
When you were away, I comically say that was it. He added an extra 5 million just to nudge it a wee bit ahead of the Switch. But I get the feeling it might have just been a slip of the tongue, and it's just like, he's just had a rough... But that's not a kind of number that you have as a rough estimate, is it? That's like, 155 is like been the accepted number for quite a while now. It's just weird that he would suddenly go, oh, by the way, it's 160, bye. It's like, wait, what?
Game shops across Brazil and all these markets just firing out PS2s.
There's a landfill that just got dug up in New Mexico with 5 million PS2s in it. And they all count.
Ultimately, like, this will, there'll be a weird argument that comes down. First of all, do you think the Switch gets close enough to make this argument? Because it needs 20 million.
Yeah.
Do we get 20 million Switches in its last year?
Yeah. We do. Mm. If it, maybe not, we would, not in its last year, but I think it will continue.
Eventually.
They'll keep it going, yeah. Because when the Switch Pro or whatever, the Switch 2, whatever the hell it's called, comes out, they're not just going to instantly draw a line under the Switch. The Switch will get repositioned as a kind of kid-friendly system. You'll probably get another Pokemon game for it, like a lesser...
ZA is coming out on old Switch as well, so...
So you'll get... You'll get maybe another year once the Switch 2 comes out. You'll get another year maybe with some smaller titles come out for it. The price will finally drop eventually, I think. I think they'll... Even if they're not planning a price drop, if I was Nintendo, I would force one and take the hit just to get it over that line and finally come out and say, look, this is the greatest selling system of all time. I think they'll do that. I think they'll take the hit to get to that point.
Make that Switch Lite 99 quid like they used to do with all like the random wee plasticky DSs. Yeah. Like, yeah, get it to a point where even if it's made out of the crappiest materials, make it 99 quid, pack in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, and those will just fly.
It'll happen. They'll get there. It won't happen this year, but it'll tick away, and the Switch 2 will come out, everyone will focus on that. Switch 1 will tick away, and like 9 or 12 months down the line, they'll do a financial report and someone will say, oh, it's finally passed 160 million now, let's say.
We'll log on to the Slack at 6 a.m. and see in all capitals that it's finally happened. We'll be able to pull the little chain and all the balloons will come down.
Finally.
Finally.
We'll get there.
Congratulations to a system that was underpowered when it released. Final story before we get into some questions. The Embracer CEO says it's too early to start buying studios again. I don't think so. I don't think he should be so harsh on himself. Old Lars Wingfors, who we called Lars Fredriksson and Lars Ulrich last week, I have to apologise. Well, I'll apologise to Lars Fredriksson from Rancid, because I like him and I like Rancid's music. Lars Ulrich is a dickhead, so I do not apologise to him. take this podcast to court, I dare you. It'll be Pete Donaldson that pays for it. But we talked about last week, they sold off Gearbox to Take-Two, Borderlands is free, as is Duke Nukem, Hail to the Chief, etc. And then Lars, CEO Wingfors said, looking to do more mergers and acquisitions, I think it's way too early to start talking about restarting the M&A engines again. Restarting the M&A engines again. This is how this person talks about a series of... business missteps that have thus forth cost thousands of people their jobs. Does it not just make your blood boil, Chris Williams?
Yeah, I think the way things have been going for Embracer just now, he should maybe just keep quiet for a wee while, just because nothing he says is going to kind of look that good. If you punt, you close so many studios and lay off so many people, and then he comes out and says, oh, well, even though he's saying that we're not going to start acquiring people again, the fact that he's even talking about it, and granted he might have been asked about it and that's why he's mentioned it, but just don't even mention it, don't even bring it up, because all those people that get laid off are going to sit there and go, you better not like start hiring again after you've done a mass firing. He needs to be a bit just kind of lay low, have a wee low profile for a wee while all the kind of ill will about Embracer eventually kind of dies down, and then maybe come out and say, okay, we've learned where our mistakes lay, and now we're going to slowly try and build back up again. Don't just like, I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way a wee bit.
I think they have poisoned their messaging so badly that they can't do anything for quite a while. They can't do anything until they put out a good fucking game, okay? Mm-hmm. Haven't the Embracer Group put out a single good game? I don't think so.
Aye.
Not to my knowledge, at least. But how do I think more about how this frames the next acquisition from one of the big boys. Like, say PlayStation was to acquire Arrowhead, who made Helldivers. You could, if that happened, zero people would be surprised.
Mm.
But how do you think the reaction would be publicly, especially because their last big bit of acquisition, Bungie, has seemingly only led to headlines of like Neil Druckmann and the head of Bungie were having a fist fight. The head of Bungie wanted to do an angle with Real Glass, and Neil Druckmann said, "You don't do that on this show."
Yeah, it's. I'd be surprised if Sony did acquire anyone anytime soon with the big man coming in. Is it Totoki? Hiroki Totoki?
Yeah, Hiroki Totoki.
I'd get the feeling that they'll be tightening the purse strings for now with big HT in charge, because the way he's been talking about we need to be more aggressive with increasing our profits and stuff, releasing games on PC and all that, I think he's looking at saving some money and kind of getting the numbers back up. So I don't see them acquiring anyone anytime soon. But
Stallion calls to Tory penny pinching bastard. That's what I'm hearing.
Skinflint, I think, was the word I used.
Miser.
But yeah, I think all kind of acquisitions will be kind of looked on quite warily these days, especially even though Microsoft one, they kind of got away with it. That Activision one was like obscenely expensive. And to be fair, we still got to see what actually comes of that. It's far too early to see. You're going to have to look at that a few years down the line and say, was that worth it? Which I think it will have been. I think the amount of money they'll make on Call of Duty and other things will eventually kind of prove that it was worth it. But we'll see. Crazy days.
Crazy days. Speaking of crazy days, did you see that CM Punk interview yesterday?
I've not seen that one yet. I've been. Was this on TV? Was this on Raw?
No. This was the podcast he did with Ariel Helwani, where he was asked about Vince, and then he started talking about fucking Chris Benoit. Yeah.
Mate.
He compared Vince to Chris Benoit and Jeffrey Dahmer. It was the most...
The dream team.
My WWE 2K24 universe mode's popping off.
My faction.
But it was crazy. So we talked about all the AEW stuff and all that. I was like, God, if this is what he talks about in the podcast, we really need to start petitioning to get him for episode 100.
That's crazy, man. That's
CM Punk shoots on games journalism. he called Dave Meltzer a goof as well, which was funny.
Harsh words. steady on, Charles Montgomery Punk. I've not listened to that. I'll definitely need to give that a listen. I'm still catching up on Raw. I'm kind of wary now of watching too much wrestling because I'm setting myself for disappointment when I invariably don't get Clash of the Castle tickets because it'll sell out within 3 seconds with bots jumping all over it. So
for those listening, we apologise for the... Well, I don't apologise personally, but I feel like it's the kind of thing you're meant to say. We apologise on the behalf of Stack and Pete Donaldson Enterprises for the amount of wrestling chat, but it is WrestleMania week, so indulge us, okay?
Mm.
They announced today that they're going to do the first ever pay-per-view in Scotland, Clash at the Castle. It's being set roughly an hour away from the actual notable castle in Scotland, but that's by the by. They're doing it in a 14,000 seater. I think they could fill Murrayfield if they wanted to. What are they doing?
I mean, I've seen the arguments again, like explaining why, and I get it to an extent that there's stuff on. I think Murrayfield's doing like a beam back of the Scotland Germany game or something on the night before or something like that. And but I think the general argument, which I understand, is that good luck doing an outdoor event in Scotland. And expecting the weather to be okay. But I mean, everyone else manages it.
I mean, Taylor Swift is playing three nights in Murrayfield the weekend before.
Big tay-tay. Maybe that's another reason. I don't know how long it takes to transform an arena from, transform a stadium from a gig to a wrestling setup. I would imagine it doesn't. It's not. They've got teams who do these things. It's a mass, it can be a crazy undertaking, but. Yeah, I imagine
the Undertaker. Well, are you confirming Mark? Listen, Mark Calloway is going.
The deed man's back.
They're all going to be here in June. We can fucking get one of them. I'm telling you now. We'll definitely get
the Undertaker on here.
Peach just texted me. He said, "Spare no expense. We can hire a studio."
We'll be talking away, and then suddenly all the lights will go out. But it'll be American Badass Undertaker. You'll get Kid Rock going, and then.
Man walking,
and he'll just turn up. He'll just be have the headband on, but he'll just talk normally. Just as long as we keep it away from politics.
he'll start talking about how cops' rights matter, etc. The thin blue line.
Same like it would be nice to have Austin on, but he'll just talk about guns every day. Like, what? Because I'm a hunting with my bow.
He's a wonderful Instagram follow because he just talks about this wee cat that he's got on his farm. He's like, "I'm going out today. I'm going to see Pancho the farm cat. Pancho be hunting these rats. Got these big rats. What?"
He'll be at WrestleMania, guaranteed. You heard it here first. Yeah. 100%. He's turning up to stun The Rock and win.
I want that to be the most overbooked shite ever. I want that match to just be everybody running in. I don't
remember
care.
when Sting fought Triple H and all the NWO and all DX came out. That's what I want. I want the whole roster coming out and helping Cody finish his story, and then they all hold him up like Mick Foley.
Yeah, less of a running and more of a walk in. Exactly. NWO thing.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Anyway, we asked you for questions due to the awkward timing of the podcast this week, and boy, did ye deliver. Let's go one for one. Chris, I'll ask you one, you ask me the next one.
Sounds good.
Let me start.
Should I have the questions ready then?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Hold on. I'm going to carefully try and type. I'm actually, kids, I'd like to recommend this app that I've forgotten the name of, because I'm actually using my phone here as a webcam, and the quality is remarkable. And granted, a lot of that is down to the phone itself, but it's an
Elgato product.
The software is Elgato, but the phone is Apple, I believe. Combined,
they'll really appreciate that. They'll appreciate that shout out, Apple. They're needing it.
They're a young up and coming company, and they need any scraps they can get. So, check them out. Apple, that they're called. I think the founder,
Apple Computers.
The guy who founded him is dead now, I think. But the other guy, the guy's on top now. He's pulling them up by the bootstraps, and they're getting there. So check them out.
I'm not saying Steve Jobs deserved to die, but I'm pretty sure he tried to like cure liver cancer or whatever just with like good vibes. So
fair play.
Not that clever a man. Not that clever a man.
God rest him.
God rest him, merry gentlemen. First question, Scruffy Tail asks, for someone who's looking to get further into the games media industry, what kind of advice would you give? Chris, I'll put an addendum onto this. This is not someone that's done nothing. This is right at the start, they're doing a bit of blogging, they're doing it, they're trying to get into Twitter conversations. What's the step after that?
First of all, I'll tell you what my advice is not. And my advice is not don't bother, because I've been doing this for 18 years, and every now and then I'll see kind of old grizzled veterans getting asked, how do you get into games journalism? And they say, don't do it, don't bother. And I was like, But I was like, just fuck off. Like you got there, you did it, you got to experience it. So
I will concede that in some dark moments, especially recently with how the jobs have gone, I've had similar thoughts, but I do know what you mean. People that have been at Edge for 20 years being like, oh, don't bother.
I wouldn't say, like, my next advice wouldn't be definitely rely on it as like a long-term source of employment. But if it's your dream, like, do it so you can say you've done it. Don't just let someone put you off it. Like, if you do it for a while and you realize it's not for you, or you're not making the money you wanted to make and you want to move on, then at least you can tick it off and say that you don't need to do it forever. Exactly.
Like, you don't need to be like Chris Gullion here, who will die in this chair. He will die on this podcast, like Tommy Cooper.
Listen, once I get my CBE for services to video games journalism, then I'll step down. But until then, until King Charles pulls a finger out, I'm
God rest him.
God rest him in advance. Probably this goes out Thursday, doesn't it? So God rest
fingers
him.
Crossed.
So my advice would be, like, you if you're doing the blogs, you're already starting well, because you need to kind of you need to practice. It's infuriating when people say, I want to become a games journalist, and then they send you some stuff and it is abysmally written. And I don't mean that to be cruel, but for the amount of time I've done it, I've genuinely lost count how many times people say, I fancy a crack at this, and then they show that they can't string a sentence together, and it's like, it's almost insulting, because it's like, this is a craft. Do you know what I mean? It's not, I always say, it's a stupid analogy, but I always say that people think everyone can do this job because it's writing and everyone can write, but everyone thinks they can drive. But if you put me behind an F1 car, I'd put it into a wall and die like at the first corner. It's like, it's not the same thing.
I also think there's an element of people being so reductive about what it actually is. They're like, oh, I'd love to just, I play games all the time, and then I tell my mates what I think about them. Yeah. My reviews could go anywhere, and it's like,
yeah, it's not the
same. Write it down.
Yeah.
Get 1,000 words out of your opinion, and make sure you don't repeat yourself.
Yeah.
Make sure there's a through line. Make sure you're factually correct. It's not.
Make sure the score just annoys the right number of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely.
Be sure to apply the Xbox tax. Once you're an actual games journalist, you'll be informed about the tax rates and things like
that. But keep writing, but also get advice on your writing from people who actually know writing, because one of the biggest traps you can fall into is just reading your own stuff, because you'll never learn any mistakes you're making. Everyone loves their own stuff more than anyone else. When I was at CVG, not VGC, but CVG, there was a guy who like properly picked apart everything I wrote, and I genuinely hated the guy for a while, because I was like, I know what I'm doing here. I've been doing this for years now. My writing's great, because everyone loves their own writing. But like, I changed it just to shut him up, and realized that he was completely right, and that my writing got so much better as a result. So keep sending your writing to other people to get feedback on it and improve it. Keep doing your blog, even if nobody reads it, because when you eventually apply for a job, you will then have something that you can point to them towards and say, this is what my writing's like. And that's your best writing, because that's your own style. Try not to make it too jokey, and I realize that's coming from me, the jester of games journalism, but
that's what we call it.
old jester boy. But most kind of serious publications don't put a lot of jokes in their writing, so pointing to a blog with loads of jokes in it is a great way to put people off. There's loads of other things, advice I could give, but I think it feels like a multi-podcast thing, because there's lots.
Yeah, when it's dead, I want to get the three of us in here to talk about this more, kind of share war stories, but we'll do bits and pieces now. As someone that's got in much more recently than Chris Gullion, although not as recently as people seem to think, it was a lot of that. I have a weird kind of perspective on it, because I did very little writing before doing the BBC stuff, so I didn't have the do your blogs, do your like your low paid stuff. I just kind of went from BBC, did a year of freelance, and then I came to VGC. But even now, see my Tears of the Kingdom review, there was like three, four entire versions of that, because Andy has no problem saying this is shite. Mm-hmm. You can do it way better than this. Like, you have a better review in you. Yeah. And if you're a hyper emotional person like me, you'll take that like you take that and first of all channel it into pure fury and then do something that is better. Like, it never stops. Like, I won't, if I ever get to the point where I'm not sending my shit to someone and I'm just putting it out, it's gonna be garbage, man. It has to have someone there. Even stuff that he does or stuff that you do, it all gets like frittered around.
That's the thing. Is like, as I constantly say, I've been doing this for ages now. But even every time I do a review, I'll still send it to Andy to have a look at it. And when Andy publishes something, he'll ask me to have a look at it as well. Because if it's something like a quick news story, fine. I'm at the point now in my career where I can get away with putting a news story up when nobody else is around to check it and just put it up and know that it's going to be fine. It's written like new. I did a journalism degree at uni, so I kind of had it drummed into me back then, how you do your inverted news pyramid and how to structure a news story and all this kind of stuff. So the stuff we do on VGC during the day is kind of bread and butter for me, but reviews and more creative stuff, which is less of a kind of formulaic process, always kind of let other people look at it. Because Even if it's a game where you think, if it's a review, you think you've made your points well, somebody else will read it and say, I don't understand what you're talking about. This reads worse than you're giving it, or vice versa.
See, especially when you're reviewing a huge game and you start to live it, stuff becomes shorthand to you that you need to explain how it works, like mechanics and stuff like that. I hate, like,
games
reviews that are just, I really do. But, so, Because the language of games is different from game to game, you don't get away with as much as you do in a film review, where you basically understand like what is going on in terms of when you're talking about like the cinematography, the performances, things like that.
Yeah.
But a game to a game, we have to use the same review structure for Forza Horizon and like Inside or something like that. Like, how is that? How can they possibly? And I think that actually speaks to a broader point about how comparing review scores against stuff like that make it all meaningless.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is there's a podcast in this where we'll do a spin-off episode where we just talk about stuff like this. Yeah. But Chris, give me a question.
This is from Mike Wakely. No relation to... I was going to say Phil Oakey, and I don't know why. Like of course, there's no relation.
There's no relation to someone with a completely different name.
And surname are completely wrong. So, like, no relation to Wakefield. Mike Wakely says, with the growing number of influencers being sent new games to play, are you finding that being a journalist, you're being sent fewer games to review, or has it had little effect for you?
I mean,
I've noticed it.
Have you actually? That's interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking going way back. Like when I started, for people who, I apologize to the people who've been following my stuff, because I'm...
Me too, I know, fucking hell.
I'm repeating the same stuff ad infinitum, but as Stan Lee once said, every comic book someone's first. So for those not like aware, I'd started in 2006 at the Official Nintendo Magazine. And at that time, magazines and websites were the big thing, and websites in terms of, and as in like your IGNs and Eurogamers and stuff like that. There was no influencers because frankly, I don't know if there was YouTube when I started. I think it might have been Yahoo videos or something like YouTube. Mm. It might not have even started. But certainly, I do see more examples now of influencers getting preferential treatment in some publishers, not all. A lot of other publishers kind of do it kind of even-handed, but you get other situations where we've seen it with some games recently where you've gone on YouTube and seen footage of games that have been captured by them personally, and you're like, well, we don't even have preview code yet. What's going on here? And then they explain, oh, it was an influencer day. Because I know I sound like the bitter arsehole about it, but there are different ways of covering these games. And if I was a PR, I'd be targeting influencers because they're literally called influencers. Like, if you've got a new FIFA game coming out, you're going straight for the FIFA influencers because they're going to say something good about it, and everyone who follows them cares about FIFA. So I get it.
It's one of those things where what you're specifically referencing annoys me, but I don't get annoyed when they have like parties or events or stuff where it's like take photos and all that stuff where it is influencer stuff.
Yeah, because we wouldn't do that anyway,
Yeah, we've got nowhere to put that stuff. Maybe a TikTok. Like, it depends. There's a sliding scale.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to the Pokemon Center because I will do stuff about... We are a very Pokemon... We're a very pro-Pokemon website, Shock Horror, with me on it. Yeah. But, like, I also totally understand where PR people are like, we have a limited number of resources and people to invite to this. If we invite a journal who may work for a website that's much bigger but will do fuck all and just kind of turn their nose up about it, that gets us way less than like an influencer with like maybe 2,000 followers, but this is their niche. Like, they're so into this thing that it'll kind of perforate better. So,
but
in terms of actual games, like not, I actually find that we get stuff when it comes to the view time. We often get stuff way before influencers because they can't be trusted sometimes. But yeah, and the preview, it can be quite annoying.
Yeah, and it is, and it's also. The specialist thing is the other is important for multiple reasons. Not only do they have that following that is interested in that game, but they're also far less likely to be negative about it. Like if I'll check out like a new rally game, say a rally is a weird example because I don't think there's many rally influencers. There's many God rest them. I don't think there's many rally influencers, but say a new. Call of Duty game, say. I don't give a shit about Call of Duty. If they send me to play a Call of Duty game and I've played the last couple, say, and I'm noticing that this is just the same old shit, I might be inclined to say in the preview, this feels like the same old shit. But a Call of Duty website that thrives, a Call of Duty YouTube channel that thrives on Call of Duty content will instead put up 20 videos of all the levels that they've played and say, look at this, look at this, look at this, look at this. And there'll be less negativity. And that's not to say, well, that is to say there's a bias. And that is, I don't think there's anything wrong with a bias if their job is to influence people. It's just, it's when people decide, and I see it a lot online, people saying that influencers are the ones you can trust but more than journalists. That's what kind of winds me up a wee bit, because our job is to call it as we see it, and I think some influencers prefer to kind of put a positive spin on things for their user base.
Yeah, it's the conflation of the two is like the worst thing to ever happen, because they're not the same thing.
No, they're completely different.
But alas, okay, let me give you one. Let me see. I will pick John Adams, American Patriot, second president, I believe. Says,
is no relation to Stanley Kubrick.
No, apparently not. No relation to Charlie Adam. Is it ever too late to start in games journalism? What's your advice for someone older considering making the move?
I mean, it can be too late. If you're dead, then you've probably missed it. No, it can never be too late. Like, there's, if anything, being older, not that I would know, it gives you like a different perspective. I don't necessarily think it's a popular one, but I think I would love to see more writers who have been around long enough to kind of know references from back in the day that they can call up and call back to. It's just a personal bugbear of mine, seeing a lot of kind of, I'd see some 20-somethings doing retro content, and it's fine. I love that people are like appreciative of it, and they're kind of.
Does it feel like stolen valor?
But it's like they'll say, "Oh, this is what happened in the '80s," and like sometimes it's wrong, and I get stuff wrong as well. But it adds an extra kind of spite to me when I say, "Well, you weren't there, clearly." Go, Koji, you don't know what you're talking about, which is just my own personal insecurity. But I think having experience behind you in terms of age is a good thing. So I don't think it's ever too late to start writing. If anything, the older you get, the more the kind of, hopefully the wiser you get, and the less likely you are to make daft mistakes, like go on big Twitter rants and stuff like that, and do kind of,
who would do that? Well, come on now. I mean, who amongst
you see
us?
The kids out there with their wee rants.
I think I've still got maybe a year and a half of still being considered young in this industry, so I'll get mine in before I turn 30, and then that'll be me.
I'll be you done.
I'll retire. I'll be quite shy and retiring, you know me. Give us a question, Chris.
Okay. This is from Kyle. just Kyle. He doesn't have a surname.
No relation to Kyle from South Park, no?
No, not any relation to Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Says, bit of a random one, and not sure if it's been asked already, but what is your favourite ice cream flavour? Bracket S. So you're allowed tablet. Multiple flavours. Tablet?
Tablet, brother. Tablet ice cream.
Listen, I'll tell you, that's a shout, by the way. That's a shout. There is a company, and it's a Scottish company, I don't know who it is, that does...
Between that and I'd like to recommend this app, I don't know what it's called.
Well, Google it then, just to give me an air of kind of authority. But they do snowball flavour ice cream, as in the snowballs you can get. If I type snowball ice cream, I'm not going to get anything like it. Oh, here we go. It's Lee's. The company is Lee's.
Just a guy called Lee.
You can get it in Asda. They do Lee's, it's Equis is the brand. Lee's make the snowballs. Equis, the ice cream company, makes the snowball flavoured ice cream. And it's a treat.
So does it just taste like chocolate and marshmallow then?
Pretty much. It's chocolate, marshmallow and coconut. May contain nuts and contains milk, amazingly. So sorry kids, if you're wanting that milk-free ice cream, chase yourself. But yeah, no, it's very nice. That's my current fave. The missus likes the old Ben and Jerry's. She's a corporate.
So is that why you're impoverished now? Because she's been asking for Ben and Jerry's? That's why you keep writing these books? All your advances just going on Ben and Jerry's?
Just going on fish food with a PH. yeah, occasionally you'll get like deals on Ben and Jerry's. That's when I strike. But it's like $5.50 a tub. It's like...
Yeah.
Chase yourself, mate.
You're walking out of the shops with fistfuls of Ben and Jerry's.
Exactly.
Yeah, tablet ice cream. It can be Mackey's, it can be cheapy stuff, but tablet ice cream is the one for me. I love tablet. It's just so poisonous as a foodstuff. Pure sugar.
So I don't think even a lot of English people are aware of tablet, though. Like, I had a friend who, when we lived in London, like who came to her wedding. And we had wee bits of tablet on everyone's table because we had people coming from England and from Canada and everywhere. So we put tablet on everyone's table. And a friend from London, which had lived in London all her life, was like, what is this? And she absolutely loved it. So we have to send her tablet all the time now.
Tablet is made from sugar, condensed milk and butter. And that's it.
That's it.
That's just
the Holy Trilogy. Or Trinity even.
The Holy Trilogy.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's the tablet ice cream's a good shout.
I agree. I've got another question for you, Chris. Jason Milner says, if you're both offered the chance to join any faction in wrestling history, which one would you join? I'm pretty sure you were actually in the NWO at one point in like the late 2000s.
Well, everyone was, to be fair. Like, everyone got a shot at it. I think I joined in between Buff Bagwell and Vincent. God rest him. I recently I was in it for a couple of weeks. I think if I was to join any faction though, it would be the Right to Censor.
Nice. Yeah.
the shittest faction of all time.
Best entrance music ever, like
with just the big X in the middle of it. What about you? Have you got a obscure faction you're going to pluck out of?
Well, I could be an absolute nerd and be like the Bullet Club, I would love, in terms of, I'm putting this in terms of how fun it would be to perform the role. I think being in the Straight Edge Society when they were doing the Charles Manson stuff would have been great fun. Like when they were like doing the shaving the head and pledging the allegiance and like Punk had like the straggly black hair. That would have been a great fun. Or NWO, because you'd been making infinite money in the 90s.
Yeah, you've got your guaranteed contract.
Yeah.
This doesn't really count as a... Well, it does count because they started as a two, then they became a three, and I completely forgot about them until I heard their theme music recently. Do you remember X Factor?
You're dealing with the X Factor. I never wanted.
That was the team of... Who was in the X Factor? One of them's easy enough. X-Pac easy enough.
Albert.
Mm-hmm, he came later.
Just Incredible.
Exactly. That's your three.
Yeah.
What a team.
the little rat-faced bastard, just incredible. Yeah, shout out OSW Review, because they talk about X Factor all the time, and I've heard that. I got everything I ever wanted, and I never get that back.
So who was that? Was that Uncle Cracker that sang that? I believe.
Oh, shout out Uncle Cracker.
Kid Rock's pal.
Oh, Pete, if we won't get sued into oblivion, put the X Factor theme as the last part of this podcast.
I went through a Kid Rock phase because my aunt, because
of his political views.
Oh yeah, of course. Don't tread on me. But when I went to my aunt who lives in America, she lived in Ohio for a while, then moved to Michigan, and she moved out to the middle of nowhere in Michigan, and she said, like, it's one of these places, like, literally, like, rural, where her house was in the field.
And then the next
neighbor was, like, a tiny house in the distance. And she said, somebody famous lives over there. I think he's Kid Rock or something. I was like, you're joking. And, like, yeah, we apparently lived, like, in the big house, like, further down. Like, it was just, like, a dot in the landscape. That's how far away the field was. And this was during the American Badass era, where he would always come out there and come out with his bike. So yeah, Kid Rock was so I was.
It's a miracle that The Undertaker regained some of his credibility after that.
You think that was he had done? But yeah, so Kid Rock, Uncle Cracker, Joe C. He can't be alive. He can't still be alive. Did he die?
Joe C, famously of The Simpsons fame, he's long dead, I think.
Was he in The Simpsons?
I think the episode that Kid Rock is in, Joe C is in it.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, he looks absolutely grim. He died in
well, if
November
he's dead, you would expect so.
I mean, he has been dead for 24 years at this point, so...
What, so did he die?
He died November 2000. Yeah.
But when was the American Badass gimmick? Was that 99?
I don't... I think...
Did he...
So Kid Rock's 2001 album, Cocky, was dedicated.
They say I'm cocky, and I said, "What? It ain't bragging, motherfucker. If you back it up, that one."
Nah.
Which was used in a Steve Austin promo, I believe.
He looks a lot like Hasbulla. I'll just say that now. Was he a wee?
He was, like, a wee guy. He had a squeaky voice in it, but he had a hell of a mouth on him for a wee guy. We already heard some of the language. Absolutely outrageous.
Oh, we're in dangerous territory. Let's do one more and then go. Ask me a question, Chris.
Oh, sorry, I was drawn away looking up X Factor.
Thinking about Joe C in the X Factor.
God rest him. I didn't know Monster Coffee was a thing. Cyanide. No relation to Greta Garbo. It says, as a Monster connoisseur, what's the opinion on Monster Coffee? I don't know if it's discontinued but can't find it anymore. Was Monster Coffee a thing?
I think it was called Monster Java, technically, but yeah, it was in, like, shit-coloured cans and it was absolutely disgusting. I hate coffee anything coffee adjacent, so not interested, mate. See, if you hand me a coffee at Evo, I'll split your head open with a knife.
I'll tell you a faction, because the Dudley Boys counts as a faction, ECW era.
Yeah.
If you had Spike and Big Dick Dudley and such, then I wouldn't mind being in the Dudley Boys.
With those glasses, you've got a bit of the Dudley.
There I go. I just need a wee bit of tape to go in here.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I suppose you're thinking Bubba Ray, aren't you? But I suppose Spike would...
No, you're the image of Devon. Of course I'm thinking Bubba Ray.
Testify,
Brother Devon. let's start a TNA podcast.
You think there's going to be a Scotland run in during Clash of the... They're going to make like
it's going to be Kenny Miller.
No, but they'll make like a Scotland faction before it, with Piper Niven and Nikki Cross and Gallus and Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, especially because they look like they're changing their gimmicks and just bring all the Scots together in one big Scott.
It'll be like when the LWO came out during that Puerto Rico backlash.
SWO.
Who's the Scottish equivalent of Bad Bunny? Lulu.
That wee man who used to like do the rapping. He's Bad Bunny.
I mean, he is a wrestler. He's a worker.
Lewis Capaldi, surely.
Yeah, I went to uni with Lewis Capaldi. That's my claim to fame.
You know what the sad thing is?
Arrogance was astounding.
Do you know what the sad thing is when they do? Yeah. If they do a Scottish faction, they'll still leave out Noamdar.
Yeah.
That guy doesn't get a break.
Supernova. I love Noamdar.
Sad days.
He's a big. he's a big something, but I can't remember if we'd allowed to say
like,
that.
Like Drew.
like all of them, unfortunately. it's something about taking a lot of blows to the head. Anyway, we're done for this week. We'll be back next week. I think you're off next week, aren't you?
I'm off next week, but given this setup, I'm only in a mere caravan. I might still be able to manage it, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. Anyway, we will be back. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for listening, watching, etc. You can send comments, questions, and concerns to podcast at videogameschronicles.com.
Especially concerns.
Yeah, certainly concerns. Thanks to Grant Kirkhope for the theme song that gets wasted every week. Follow Chris at Scully1888, me at Jordan Midler. I'd like to give a special shout out to Matt CFC90, sent a very lovely message to the podcast and he's been having a hard time. So we'll keep making these podcasts, Matt. We'll keep making them and they'll only get worse. So at least if things are going bad in your life, you can think, at least I'm not on that podcast. That could be
let us
worse.
Know when things get better and then we can start upping the quality again.
We'll start talking about games again. We did like half an hour of games in this podcast.
That's true. Come on, we did quite a bit.
Anyway, Matt, go well. And for the rest of you, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.